Tango Tango Papa 1943, January 14, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I am currently on a load that I picked up in Brownsburg, Indiana, and it has two drops. The first one is at early in the morning at 5:30 at Oshawada, Oklahoma, which is 25 or 30 miles north of Tulsa. And then the second part of the load delivers later tomorrow afternoon down at Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, which is somewhat south of Oklahoma City. So if everything goes right, then this load will be delivered tomorrow, and then they'll obviously come up with something else. I'm not due home again until I think the 24th is when I told them I wanted to be home again. And so while I'm home, hopefully sometime back, I had ordered a new cook stove for my house, and that was supposed to have come, but then it didn't come, and it may come tomorrow. I called the appliance store today, and he said, well, it might come tomorrow, and if it does, we'll call you. So hopefully that thing's going to show up sooner or later. You'd think it would. And I'll set it up so that they can deliver it while I'm home. Got that to do. And then I think also my driver's license, it's time to renew that, which that's, you know, usually I do that in 4-year increments, and it seems like that somehow that time just passes and it's time to do it again. So, but have to do that. That's obviously pretty critical for my work, because I'm driving all the time. So that's absolutely, you know, that I got to do that. So that's one thing that I do have to do. And then otherwise, take a few days off and get away from the truck for a little bit. Regular time off. So now, when I was up in upstate New York, and then it was, at first it was warm, then it snowed and it got cold, and then up around Buffalo, I had to drive through the Buffalo area when I was leaving upstate New York. They were having a lake effect snow, so the Garmin GPS was telling me, you know, sometimes it's got this FM traffic alert thing on it. Sometimes it'll come on and it'll say extreme traffic alert rerouting, and it did that. And so I went ahead and followed the reroute. I got off of Interstate 90 and then went around on, it's U.S. Highway 20 that 90 actually replaced, up at least in the Buffalo area. Or up, you know, in that area. And so I got off on and took US 20 and went for I don't know how many miles and then got back on the interstate. So I think from the sounds of it, I avoided a major problem, because the snow in that area, the snow was coming down like mad. And then, of course, there was a lot of traffic, and so there's no telling how long those people, you know, because usually when it says extreme traffic alert, that means the traffic is backed up. It stopped, and it's backed up. And with it snowing that hard, there's no telling how long those people were sitting there. So glad I went ahead and took that, you know, got off and followed the reroute. And US Highway 20 pretty much parallels Interstate 90 in that area. And by that time, there was still a little snow, but it seemed like it had kind of tapered off. So, but in the Buffalo area, it's really strange. When they get at least from what I've seen, when they get a lake effect snow part of the town, there's not even any snow, and the sun may be shining. And then you get in the area where there's lake effect snow, and it's like it's extreme winter, and it's just a completely different weather situation within just a very compact area. It's really, really quite something. So, anyway, I have an audio file from Joel. And so I'm going to go ahead and start off with that. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Just listening to your latest that came out, I believe, about last night. Just because I actually am fairly caught up, thanks to some of the time away from work I had. And next week, I actually get to travel in St. Louis next week for work. So I'll be there. I leave on Monday and I come back on Friday. So, of course, while I'm there, I'm going to partake of the local cuisine. But anywho, not to kind of dwell on my mom, but it's nice hearing you say that you're doing that. And I'm almost a little I don't know. I'm trying to think if my mom would be disappointed that my dad's going to get more of my time, because last few years I've only been able to go down once per year. And my plan is, since I can do this, my work is almost 99% remote. So unless for some reason I can't do this, or can't do it, or like, and usually that would be if I have any travel like I have next week. I think what I'm going to probably do is, once or twice a year, it may have to be in the summer, but once or twice a year, I think I'm going to go ahead and pack up and head down and just work from my dad's house. Just so I can spend time with him. I wouldn't even care if he worked. As long as he worked and come back, we can go out to dinner, do whatever. Definitely spend more vacation time with him. I might even suggest to him that, hey, why don't you go ahead and drive up? My son's bowling tournament is in Indianapolis. And I might say, hey, why don't you come up and go with us? I'll make sure that you get food to eat and that you get to go to dinner with us and spend some time with us while we're in Indianapolis. Plus, Dad's never seen the Speedway, so I'll take him over and see that. That might be something I can do this summer with him. We're already going down to and this is something that you might find cool because of the financial stuff that comes with passing away. We chose, and if we might have chose a different thing if we knew things were going to work out the way they did, but because we thought Dad was going to have to pay for it all on his own, we ended up choosing cremation for my mom. And then to figure out that her company was going to pay for the funeral, which is fantastic. I mean, that blew me away. They paid the whole funeral bill. So, in any regard, with that, what we're going to do this summer is both my parents and not myself, you know, our wives, my mom and dad and my wife and I, we honeymooned at Colonial Williamsburg. And my mom and dad, since, you know, in the last few years, have actually been taking vacations there because it brought back a lot of memories for them and stuff like that. So they really consider that like to be like their place. They really, they had a great time there. So we're going to go to Colonial Williamsburg this summer with my brother and his family. And we're going to spread her ashes at the governor's palace there. So it'll be good vacation time. But I think, I, like I said, I might also say, hey, Dad, why don't you drive your Camaro? Because that's what he had. Had two cars and one payment. The payment with both cars together, if you count both payments, I should say, was about $500. And he needed to reduce the amount of money coming out. So he took both cars over to the dealership and traded them both on a 2013 Camaro. So knowing my dad, if you knew my dad as I do, that's not really a surprise. Dad's always been a hot rodder. So at least he gets to enjoy that. So, but you know, you could take a trip up to Indianapolis. I say, if you can just meet us there, I'll pay for the room and we'll pay to take you to the Speedway, go for a ride around Indianapolis, and go see the museum, stuff like that, and do that. So, but you know, the cooler thing is though, is I can just do the normal mundane stuff and just go down because my job doesn't require me to be at certain places to do my work for most of it, you know, except for like next week. I can actually travel down there and work from my dad's house. And like I said, I can spend time in the evening, so I don't have to always be in Columbus. Although Columbus is always my home, probably always will be. But, I could take time periods where we have nothing going on up here and just go down there, work, and spend time with them. So that's something that's unique with my current job. So, of course, now another thing that's going around the social webs has been the Powerball jackpot for this weekend, which is like, I don't know, I think $600 or $700 million or something like that. You know, I'll buy a ticket. If I buy tickets, I know mathematically I have no chance for the most part, you know, but, you know, whatever. I want to buy a couple tickets just for the heck of it, you know, and if I win, great. If I don't, you know, well, great too. You know, I don't put myself, when I go to buy lottery tickets and stuff like that, I don't make bets that I can't afford. I can afford to lose a dollar or two, say a dollar or two, big deal. So, anywho, thanks for the kind thoughts. And I'm for you, not just you, but your listeners. If you still got your mom and dad around, let's spend time with them because they're not going to be around forever. And you're right. That's something we're never ready for. So take care. Oh, and then listen a little bit further. And I heard your mention of you saying, well, sorry to hear that. Wishing, you know, you putting condolences isn't going to change anything. That's why I think you're wrong. I think for me, just going through this and still going through it, because, you know, I'll never be over it. I'll always miss my mom. But it really does serve a purpose. And the purpose is that it's comforting to know that you at least cared enough to say, I'm sorry to hear that. And even the ones that's all they said really had helped me deal with it a little bit. You know, it doesn't make it better. You're right. Okay. But knowing that you cared enough to at least say that, all right? And at most, you know, I've had many friends says, I'll pray for you and your family. That helps too. Because that means I know that you're thinking about me and I know that you care about me. You know, you might not care about me as much as you do your own family, but knowing that you care to at least take 5 minutes out of your day to think about me is enough. And it does make me feel better, you know? And that's what I feel it does with other people. And I used to think the same way as you did, really until I lost my mom. You know, losing my grandparents is a little bit easier. You know, I was close to them, but I've never as close to them as I've been to my mom. Right. And I'm sure there's at least one more death that I may have to experience unless I go before, but there's one more death that I may have to experience that will probably be more impactful. My dad, when he passes, that'll be impactful, just as impactful as when my mom passes. I'll be mourning just like I am with her. But it's still, to me, at the same level. The one that will be worse is if my wife passes before I do. And that's where my dad is today. And my hope is I can deal with it as well as he has. My dad and mom would have been married 46 years next month. So, I was hoping they'd make it to 50. That didn't happen. Even then, though, 46 years is an amazing accomplishment with how the world is today. My mom and dad have had, not all has been perfect. There have been times where they fought and stuff like that. But in the end, they were together. My mom loved my dad. I know that. She loved us. And, you know, I'm kind of one of those rare people. I never really rebelled against my parents. My mom and dad, I love my dad. And I love my mom. I never really felt resentment. Maybe that's just because they did a really good job bringing me up. I don't know. But I never really resented them. So it's hard. But like I said, it won't be as hard as when I lose my wife. Because my intention is to do exactly what mom and dad did and make it work. Marriage itself isn't, you know, a lot of us, we get wrapped up in our selfish selves when we're thinking about this stuff, you know, life in general, spending money, things of that nature. And that's, you know, what you have to realize is both of you are imperfect. Nobody is perfect. And you just have to make it work. And that's what makes a marriage. Marriage just isn't there. It's always there. So, anywho, I rambled on again for another 5 minutes, but you know, just know that you saying I'm sorry, much appreciated, and it's going, that is accomplishing something. It's helping me heal. I'll never completely heal. This is a wound I will never completely heal from. But, you know, I know each day will be a little bit better. And that someday I'll go get to see my mom yet. So, take care.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. On the topic of the lottery, of course, this file that he sent, I guess, probably about 6-7 days ago. And now I'm just kind of anecdotally hearing that it was like 1.5 billion it got up to. So I don't know what has happened since then. I keep hearing, just people talking about it as I walk by. See a lot of news headlines about lotteries, so I don't know what happened with that. But generally speaking, say, I have never bought a lottery ticket, ever. But, you know, generally speaking, just thinking about it, you know, and I've talked about lotteries in the past, you know, and there's at least 50% of people that, you know, lottery winners, quote unquote, they win the lottery, whatever it is, the millions or whatever, and 50% of them, it ends up kind of ruining their lives. And, you know, just, you know, kind of do a thought experiment. You know, now a lot of people think, well, if I won the money, then I'd, you know, I'd pay off all my stuff and I would quit my, you know, then they'd think, well, I'd quit my job and then I'd just travel the world and, you know, all these pie in the sky kind of things. And in the back of their minds, even though people have heard over and over again, money doesn't make you happy. Money cannot buy happiness. People think, I'm convinced that people believe that it can. That it, somehow it can buy them happiness. And I'm sorry, but it can't. It can't buy happiness. But just, I don't know, the way I look at it, and this is just my opinion, but the way I look at it, you know, what hope do you have? You know, even if you just spend a dollar on a lottery ticket, and I don't even know what the prices of the tickets are, but let's say you spend a dollar on a lottery ticket. What is, you know, do you have some hope? Are you placing some hope or some faith in, you know, spending the money on that ticket? You know, even if you know that statistically, you know, there's a just an impossible odds that you would win, then why would you do it? You know, because it would be this, if you really did believe that there was no chance of you winning, then you might as well just, you know, take a match and just burn that dollar bill. Would you do that? Could you put hope in burning a dollar bill? The same kind of hope, and you really can't. And so there's something, you know, and just the way I'm looking at this, you know, and this is just my opinion again, but if I bought a lottery ticket, then somehow I would be placing hope, or I would be placing some amount of faith in the wrong thing. You know, and it's, you know, I'm not, you know, you could say, well, you got the moral argument that gambling is wrong and what have you. Forget about that. What stops me from buying a lottery ticket? I've never bought one, ever. Any kind of, you know, Powerball, whatever. Never have I bought any of these tickets, ever. See people do it all, seen people do it for years. What stops me from doing that? And there's something that does stop me from doing it. I'm not even tempted to do it. But there, again, there's something that sort of revolves around, you know, kind of would be, I would be sort of placing my faith in having some hope, placing some hope or a belief in hope, that, you know, something could possibly come and you know, and I'd have a, you know, glorious outcome. And there's, you know, and again, there's a problem with that. You know, let's say you do win the lottery. Chances are your life is over as you've known it. Your life is gone. And chances are there's at least a 50% chance you're not even prepared for the negative impact that it's going to end up having. So the question is, where do you place your hope? You know, the hope, and I don't, you know, there's a, and I think it's some, I don't know what the word is, or some language, you know, it's one of the, I don't know if it's Hebrew or Greek, but I don't remember the word, but the word for hope actually means, you know, sort of like rope. So hope is sort of like a spiritual rope. Hope is sort of like, you know, God's throwing you a rope to grab a hold of. You know, so if you can kind of think of it in those terms, then placing hope in winning the lottery, you know, in my mind, that's kind of misplaced. So this is just my opinion. So I don't know. I would never, I've never been tempted to buy a lottery ticket, and I don't think I ever will. It's just, there's something that, you know, apart from, you know, forget about the moral part of it. Who cares about that? Whether it's right or wrong, somehow I feel I would be diminished. There's something preventing me from doing that. Somehow I feel that if I placed my hope in something like that, that I would somehow be diminished. It would somehow I would be crossing a line. I would be breaching a barrier. And it, you know, it really has nothing to do with how much it costs or anything like that. Now, you know, when we go over to there's a casino in West Siloam Springs, Oklahoma, that we go to occasionally, you know, when my parents are around. Go over there and they've got a nice buffet. And of course my parents gamble and I don't. I tried it. You know, like a slot machine type thing. It's the most boring thing in the world. That was the end of that. okay, but the thing is, the people, whenever they have the people that stand, the valets that stand out there, and when people come, those valets will, you know, when they're coming and going, especially when they come, they'll say, you know, hope you have a good time, or I don't remember exactly how they phrase it, but you know, it's they're trying to imply that it's you know, like entertainment, like they're not really coming to gamble, but they're just kind of coming to be entertained, you know, either, you know, entertain themselves somehow. And, but, you know, if people want to gamble, fine. I don't have, you know, go ahead, do it. But, I think it's, especially with the lottery, this lottery thing, there is, just a psychological thing. That, you know, sort of, I'm kind of lost for words here. It's sort of like I say, it's sort of, there's sort of a little psychological, or, you know, like a barrier. Don't cross the barrier, you know, because you're, why are you putting hope in something like that? You know, and another interesting little thought experiment would be, let's say that you knew that if you bought, that it was guaranteed that if you bought the lottery ticket or whatever, that you would be the winner. You'd win millions of dollars. Then, you know, what kind of conundrum does that put you in? You know, if you knew that you'd be the winner, does that place you in a conundrum? Now, does that, let's say that, you suddenly end up coming into that kind of money, then does it make your life better? You know, would that kind of money make my life better? Probably not. Would the money make me happy? No. It wouldn't. And what is happiness? You know, I'm convinced people don't really know what that is. They think it's a feeling, and it's not a feeling. Happiness is not a feeling. I'm sorry. You may think that it is. You may believe that it is, and it's really not. It's kind of like, it's sort of like health. How do you know that you're healthy? Do you feel healthy? No. It's just you know when you're unhealthy, you know when you got a disease, you know when you've got some kind of a life-threatening illness, then you know what health was. But otherwise you don't even know you have it. And happiness is exactly the same thing. It's not a feeling at all. And so how do you find happiness? You know, you have to go through a period of unhappiness in order, you know, to even be motivated to find it. You know, because how would you know what it was? How would you know that anything was missing? You know, there are, just imagine a plant, you know, seed in the ground. The seed has to struggle. It has to send out its tap roots and what have you. And it has to struggle, you know, before it can, you know, blossom into whatever, you know, let's say it's going to become a tree or something. It has to be able to go through the struggle in order to become the, you know, let's say it's an oak tree. It has to go through the struggle. And there's something about the struggle that the thing needs. You know, there are there are a number of different zoo animals. You know, animals that can't, you know, they try to breed them in captivity and they just can't do it. You know, whereas out in the wild, the animal, you know, if the animal's out in the wild and it's, its natural habitat, then it has to struggle, and somehow it's able to reproduce itself. But it, you know, when it has it easy, life is easy, and its meals are all assured. There are plenty of, you know, a number of different animals, species that cannot reproduce. They just, you know, but in the wild they can, and it's because, I'm convinced, it's sort of because they don't have a challenge. Now, of course, you have other species that, they sort of replicate easily. It seems like they replicate easily whether they're in captivity or not. It seems like there are plenty of those as well. So, but I don't know. The lottery thing, I am just kind of content with continuing to work and kind of work my way and pay my house off, get out of debt, and then we'll take it from there. But as far as placing my hope in something that, well, oh, I could do this and it's going to be a shortcut to, you know, to nirvana. No, I don't want it. I don't want the nirvana. You know, but I don't know, the lottery thing sort of represents a shortcut, I think, you know, some sort of shortcut to heaven or something, or some sort of shortcut to bliss. And of course, true happiness is not a feeling. Never has been, never will be. And I don't know how many people actually are going to be able to, you know, in the end, if they really will find it, or if they're even really motivated to find it. So that's just my opinion. So you know, want to play the lottery, go for it. I don't, you know, doesn't bother me one way or the other, but I'm just kind of laying out my reaction. You know, what, you know, kind of the thoughts that passed through my mind about it. So, but anyway, regarding your parents and what have you, or your dad, you say your dad's still alive. Yeah, that's great. Spend as much time as you can with him. You know, because having that family time is important. You know, having the family time is really an important thing. And there's a lot of families that, for whatever reason, they can't get along, and they sort of disown each other, and it's they go through all kinds of drama, trauma, etc., etc. And it's very unfortunate. It's extremely unfortunate. Now, on the other hand, that's not to say that if you've got some really dysfunctional relative that you've got, you know, that it's going to do you good to make peace with them or whatever. If you've got a really, I've got a dysfunctional a cousin that's pretty dysfunctional, and my solution to that is just I don't ever see him. I don't ever go around him. Might see him once every few years, and that's about it. And that's that. That's how I deal with it. Otherwise, I have nothing to do with him. Don't know, you know. So that's the way I handle that. But otherwise, if you've got relatives that are halfway functional, then, you know, if you can, spend time with them. But that doesn't mean, you know, too much time. People have to have their own space. And, you know, having your own space is also important. But it's really nice to be able to spend on a regular basis, spend as much time as you can with especially your immediate family. When I was a kid, this would have been, let's see, I would have probably been about maybe, let's say, eight years old, somewhere in there. And we were living in Smith Center, Kansas. And I would have probably been about probably seven. Well, let me think. 62. Yeah, so I would have been probably about 7, 8 years old, somewhere in there. So we lived in this mobile home park in Smith Center, Kansas. And so there was this, you know, you had the people that were running it. And I don't remember their last names, but I remember it was Freddie and Lois. And they were the landlord. And I don't know if they owned it or if they were just managers. But they were pretty nice people. you know, and there were other kids that lived in the mobile home park. And I don't know if you've ever lived in a mobile home park, but, you know, if you're a kid and you live in a mobile home park, then, you know, you usually play with the other kids. But Freddie and Lois, they were pretty nice people, you know, and I remember Freddie. I don't remember how old these people were. They were probably at least in their 50s, I would think. He died of a heart attack. And that's really the first time that I ever really, had encountered someone that I knew closely or directly that died. And I remember, you know, as a kid, I remember kind of going through a little bit of grief. You know, I didn't cry or anything like that. At least I don't remember doing that. But I do remember, you know, kind of feeling the grief, you know, so I know what grief feels like. And the thing that I observed about that was that, you know, I kind of went, you know, the grief, I could kind of experience it and, you know, and then it just kind of got less and less. And then at some point it was kind of all used up. And then, you know, then that was that. And that's really, you know, to be honest, that's really the only time I've ever really felt that kind of grief. Of course, since then, I've had other relatives that have died. The closest relatives that I've had that have died would probably be my grandparents. Granddad died, let's see, it would have been probably... maybe around 1990, I'm thinking, or maybe early 90s. Can't quite remember. You know, and I didn't really feel any grief then. And you know, and if you don't feel grief, you know, if someone dies and you feel grief, then feel it. You know, don't try to run away from the feeling. You know, experience the feeling. On the other hand, if someone dies and you don't have any feeling, you don't feel any grief, then don't try to invent it. You know, don't try to make yourself feel guilty for not feeling any grief. So when my granddad died, I didn't really feel any grief. My grandmother died around 1999, late in 99. And again, you know, I loved my I was close to my grandmother, but I really didn't feel any grief. And again, you know, I've had this philosophy, if you don't feel grief, don't try to make yourself feel guilt, or, you know, feel grief or feel guilty for not feeling any grief. But if you feel grief for something, you know, as my experience with the guy went in from my youth, I felt the grief, and then I could kind of feel that to a certain point, and then after a number of days, that was that, and it was gone, and there was no more grief, and that was the end of that. So I don't, you know, I've, you know, obviously I know that grief can strike when somebody really close dies. I know that's a possibility. I'm prepared for that. But on the other hand, even though I'm close to my parents, when they die, you know, one or both of them dies, I'm kind of prepared for it. Or at least I believe I'm prepared for it. But, and so I may or may not feel grief. If I do, then I'm just going to go ahead and experience it. You know, and then the other thing that I would say is, you know, experiencing grief, don't resent the grief, or don't, you know, don't make the mistake of resenting the person for dying. Because, you know, because that's, those things are entirely possible. That you resent the person for dying, and then you get into a whole tailspin that can cause other problems. So I've kind of mentally prepared myself for the inevitable, and it is inevitable. There's no way around it, and you know, so whatever is. Que sera, sera. You know, I don't know if that, whatever, you know, remember the Doris Day song, whatever will be, will be. But I think the big thing, you know, especially with parents, is to make sure there's no unfinished business. So, anyway, I guess there's another, is there another debate tonight? I think it was tonight. You know, who cares? I like Donald Trump. I know there are some people that despise him. There are people that are just scared. They're scared to death that he's going to win. And I think he's the next president. I really do believe that. And I'm still encountering people that, I still encounter people that think, well, it's just the government, and, you know, we've got this wonderful three-part government, the executive and the legislative and the judicial branches, and if we just put the right people in there, by golly, it's all going to work. But for some reason, we just can't get the right people in there. And again, it goes back to, I'm convinced more than ever that it's it really depends on the state of the people. You know, what kind of moral state are we in overall? And that ends up determining whether the government is kind of good or bad. And it really works better if you think of it in terms of, you know, your car, or in terms of an airplane. You know, an airplane would probably work just as well. So let's say you have a jumbo jet, and you've got the latest Boeing, whatever, 787 Dreamliner, whatever, and it's got all the latest technology. In order to make that work, you have to have not only all the latest technology, all the latest and greatest, then you've got all the aviation rules, and then you've got the pilots and the airline attendants, and then you have the passengers. Now, in order for that system to really work, to be able to function, to continue to function, you've got to have decent passengers. You've got to have good people. Running the plane, flying the plane. You know, the captain. And then the flight attendants. Then you have all the ground maintenance people. If too large of a percentage of any of those people end up becoming too corrupted. The entire system can go down. Let's say you have a passenger that's really determined to blow the plane up. Even though all those other safeguards are in place, that can still end up happening. Uh-oh, phone's ringing. Who's calling? Oh, hang on. Okay, I'm back after being on the phone for quite a while. So, anyway, the point I was making is that you can have a great system, you know, great hardware, great software, great whatever, great system, great set of rules, but if the people aren't that are making that system work won't follow those rules, if those people are corrupted, then sorry, Charlie, your system won't work. And so that's really what's wrong with the country. So what has to happen, if America is going to turn around, what has to happen is that there's going to have to be a radical shakeup. And I think that's what I kind of hope with Donald Trump, or that's sort of what I see could happen with Donald Trump. Radical shakeup. He stands, he gets to be president, kind of like what happened with Ronald Reagan. The first thing Ronald Reagan did, one of the first things he did when he became president, he fired the illegally striking air traffic controllers. And once he did that, once he stood up to them, because they were striking, it was illegal, he fired them, and of course they screamed and moaned and groaned, but they were wrong because they were doing something, they were taking an illegal action. They could not strike, it was illegal according to their contract, and he fired them, and that turned the entire tide of everything. That first, all it took was that one act of doing that, and that turned the tide on a lot of other things. And so Donald Trump could do the same thing, just get into office and just stand up to one of these unreasonable groups, just really stand up to them, and then all of a sudden you have a domino effect. And all of these creatures these slimy creatures that have crawled out of their shells, and you know, and it's kind of like you turn the lights out and all the cockroaches come out of the woodworks and have fun. Stand up to the right group in the right way, and it's like the lights come on and the cockroaches all run. And so all of these slimy creatures that have kind of, you know, we've got all of this gay marriage and God knows what else, all of that could end up crawling right back into its shell. So, but it's something radical is going to have to happen. And so that's what I see potential with Donald Trump. You know, and that could potentially cause people to kind of turn around. You know, and I'm talking about everyday people, not just the government. It's going to have to happen with everyday people. Everyday people are going to have to come back to some sort of sane, moral condition. And I know that seems like it's, how can you make that happen? Oh, it's going to be so hard to do whatever else. That's what has to happen. So, anyhow, need to be cutting this off and get headed to bed. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.